Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Thoughtful Thursday. Every Thursday, you and I have the opportunity to learn from an expert. And today's expert tells us that you can actually live a life in which you so much enjoy going to work that it doesn't even feel like work. Today's expert says that you can actually be in a relationship that you thought only existed in fairy tales, except that you were actually living it. Today's guest says all of these dreams come true can actually come true. I am very pleased to introduce to you Jody B. Miller, who is the author of From Drift to Shift. Jody, I'm delighted to welcome you to Mind Talk.
Thank you, Dr. Brewer. I'm so happy to be here.
Now, Jody, I have to ask you, I mean, these are really kind of intriguing, almost mind-exploding comments that you make. I can actually love my work so much that it doesn't even feel like work. I can actually be in a relationship that feeds me and I enjoy it. And those things are all possible?
I believe they are. I can speak from not only my experience, but the experience of thousands of people who I've helped in their professional lives and personal lives as a work-life coach, as an executive recruiter. And then I go back to my years in television in New York and as an investment banker. So I've seen people from all walks of life and helped people from all walks of life really find their bliss, which I know can sound somewhat cliche nowadays. That's sort of a phrase we hear a lot, but to me, it's more about finding meaning and happiness, because happiness is really the end goal. It's not climbing the ladder and the paycheck. It's the happiness that we are all striving for, not only in our professional lives, but our personal lives. Well, you know, I was very curious throughout my entire 30 plus years in corporate America, you know, why do people stay in professional and personal relationships that they are not happy in? I mean, is it a fear? Is it fear? Is it security? Is it that they refuse to follow their hearts? Is it a lack of self-esteem? It's a little bit of all of that. But I think the bottom line is that most of us don't follow our hearts because we're afraid. And when we take a chance and we move into the unknown, really, really good things can happen. And sometimes these things just sort of smack us in the face and force us to make a change. Like in the beginning of the book, I have Brad Feld, who's a very well-known venture capitalist, who wrote the foreword of From Drift to Shift, talks about that, about how a shift can sort of come gradually or can really smack you in the head, and you have to address it.
Well, let me ask
and
you
that
this.
Can happen in your...
Let me ask you this, Jody. You said a few minutes ago that you had a life that was in television, that was in investment banking. How do you go from those two careers, which actually both kind of seem really different from each other, becoming a author and an expert in this area? Sounds like you did a little shifting along the path.
Shifting of my own. Exactly. I have a very eclectic background. And it's funny, when I talk to CEOs of companies, or I talk to people from, whether they're new college graduates, never have been to college, or they went to Harvard, we're all sort of the same. And I'm a little different than your average sort of work-life coach, because I myself have gone through many shifts in my career. So I go deeper. I don't just look at your background and say, you know, here's what you should do. I look deeper into who the person is, and that's what really intrigues me and excites me and is my passion, really. I mean, I've been called the work happiness coach by so many companies that it's sort of become my nickname. But my background, to answer your question more specifically, when I left college, I went to the University of California at Santa Barbara. I thought I'd be the next Barbara Walters. So I went to the NAB convention in Las Vegas and put my resume. This is before cell phones and everything else.
So the NAB is the National Association of Broadcasters, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I knew that the general managers of all the TV stations stayed at the MGM Grand. So I put my dad went with me. He was a little concerned. I was 22. And I put my resume under the door of all the doors. And I ended up getting a job offer at a TV station in Salinas. But at the time, I had decided to move to New York, and I ended up working in business development for CBS, as well as assistant producing a PBS TV series called Traveling Light. I did that as well. But CBS was sort of my core job. I worked in the owned and operated division. They call it O&O, which is when Howard Stringer ran the network. And I remember wanting to work for CBS and going to this party at the Waldorf. And in the center of the room was the current owner, Larry Tisch, Howard Stringer, the president, and James Coelho, who was a member of the Federal Communications Commission, which is important to broadcasters as they try and buy up more media. And there were about 200 people there, and I was there with a major advertiser, and I, at the time, was working for a very small media company. I wasn't yet at CBS. And I said, okay, Jody, you've got to step out of your comfort zone. You want to work there. This is your dream job. You have to just go for it. So a lot of times when I talk to candidates and people looking to change their careers, either at the beginning of their career, not knowing what they want to do, mid-career or later in life, I tell them you've got to step outside your comfort zone. So I walked up to Larry, Howard, and James, and I was the only one out of 200 people, and said, hi, I'm Jody, and I'm going to work for you. And 3 months later, I was working at CBS.
That's an extraordinary story. And I'm kind of still stuck on sort of sliding the resume under the door of all the
I did that too.
So that really kind of speaks though to almost perhaps your innate level of being able to think outside of the box and then move outside of the box. What about people who don't have that skill set?
Well, you know, I talk to people about that every day, and I tell them take it in little pieces. Anne Lamott is an author I love a lot, and I went to listen to her speak. She writes a lot about life, and I heard her speak at a bookstore in Northern California, and she says, you know, when I'm about to start a new book, I'm overwhelmed. I sit at my desk and look at a blank page, and I just feel like I'm paralyzed. I can't do it. I feel like a failure. And this is a very successful author. And she says, I have this little 1-inch frame on my desk. And she goes, I look at that frame and I tell myself 1 inch at a time. And I think about that when I heard her. And so when I speak to people about making a change or a shift or trying to get out of the position they're in or the relationship or moving something forward in the direction they want to go, sometimes you need tiny steps. Maybe you don't need to go up to the president of a network or put your resume under every door. Maybe you just need to go in and have a chat with your boss and say, you know, let's talk about my position and let's talk about where you want to take the company and let's talk about how I can fit in better. And maybe that makes you a little bit more, feel as though you're a little bit more meaningful at your current position, for an example. Or maybe it's in your relationship, just sitting down with your spouse or significant other and saying, you know, I just want to share with you how I'm feeling today. That can be very scary. Little things can be scary, but if you take it in tiny, tiny little pieces, you can eventually get to that place. Not everyone can make the big jump.
And, you know, what I notice about your suggestion as an option, that you actually go to your boss and find out from your boss what his or her goals and thoughts are for the company and how you can fit in better. That's very different from either you promote me or I'm out of here.
That's right. And I can't tell you how many times, Dr. Brewer, I have had this conversation with professionals, and they're frustrated. And I, as I said before, I'm different than your normal executive, you know, coach. I don't just say, okay, go in there and tell them you pay me X or I'm out of here. I say, let's dig deeper into who you are and what you want and what matters to you and where your interests lie. And so we try and get down to the depths of where their meaning is. And then I say, go in and have an open conversation, nothing confrontational, no real agenda other than you sort of want to get to know them and where they're coming from and show that you're part of the team and just have a visit is the way I say, let's have a visit. And you just, you know, get a cup of coffee and sit down and just start to chat with them about, oh, this division is interesting. Where do you see it going? And how, why did you come here? And what are your goals for you? And you learn so much about not only your manager or your boss, but the company, the direction, and then you start to see where you fit in. And then you almost make a mentor in the process, and then the door is open for you to have your ideas come forth and for you to be heard. I mean, just this morning, I was on the phone with a professional, and he started talking about his daughter who just graduated and is in a job she hates. He says, Jody, it's her first job, and no one talks to her, and she hates it, and everyone says they're leaving. I said, listen, Tom, she should go in and sit down with her boss. It's the first thing I'm going to tell you, and just have a visit. And he goes, that is such good advice. I'm going to tell her to not be negative. Just go in there with no complaints and just have a conversation. And it's amazing what can come out of that.
Now, let me ask you this. If you're working in an environment where, let's say your boss is really shielded by his or her administrative assistants or aides or you name it, and it's really kind of hard to schedule a meeting with your boss, should you be thoughtful about what you will say to him or her if you run into them in the hallway or out in the world, or should you really try to push for that meeting?
Well, I've been doing this part of my business, and I can go back to how it all came together. It all actually makes sense why I'm doing what I'm doing now, but I think you should go for the meeting.
Okay.
And you can say to the assistant, hey, I'm going to try and see Bob. I'm real excited. And if he has some time in his calendar, that'd be great. You know, so she feels like she's part of the process too, but I would really go for that meeting. And each person knows the protocol within, but you really want to get a one-on-one with that, with your boss.
Okay.
And it will change your whole perspective on your job. I've told so many people how to do this, and it's really made a big, big difference.
One of the things that you point out is that we tend to live our lives according to a plan. And sometimes I'm thinking that maybe it's an unconscious plan. Maybe it's your parents' plan. Maybe it's your partner's plan. It may not even be your plan, but you're living it nevertheless. How does one sort of pull back from that and determine whether or not where you are is where you personally want to be? Is there a process? Are there steps to take?
Sure. I think the millennials have a big step up on a lot of us. And I have three millennials of my own who are across the board. One works for the largest tech company in the world. One is going with a startup. And the other one is delayed, and he just volunteers. So I sort of have the plethora of the millennials in my home. But what I love about the millennials is that they're going according to their own plan. For example, my ex-husband is a lawyer, and my son says, you know, I'm not going to be a lawyer like Dad. But the expectation is, well, aren't you going to go to law school? You know, I mean, that's just been always been the expectation, which is understandable. But this generation is looking at things differently and on their own terms. And they're willing to give up the money to find what they love. And I believe if you do end up finding what you love and there are ways you can do that, the money does follow. And one way you can do that is to really look inside and not pay attention to what everyone's telling you, because everyone wants to tell you what to do, whether it's your professors, whether it's your high school counselor, whether it's your parents, whether it's your peers. That your journey is not their journey. as much as you want their approval, which we all do at times, if you don't have your own approval and your own happiness first, then you're never going to really get to where you want to go. So I tell people on a daily basis, you need to sit and think and feel internally what you think is right. And that's the impulse you should take. And that's the direction you should go. It should be for your happiness first. And I just got back from my son's college graduation in the Midwest in a flyover state. And he says he's going to work for a startup, but he's like, Mom, everyone's telling me, you know, do this, do that, do this, do that. And I'm like, Cole, all I want is for you to be happy. That's all that matters. Nothing else matters. You do what makes you happy and find what gives you passion. And if you follow that, everyone will fall in line. So I'm big on intuition. I'm big on how you feel. I'm big on following your personal guidance, not what everyone else has laid out for you, whether that's society, your parents, your teachers, or your peers.
And you know, that I would say is wonderful advice, and sometimes really hard to hang on to, particularly in the world today where, you know, we've really got the haves who have a lot and the have-nots who very often have next to nothing or are barely making it. So the notion of being in a job that you hate, but it's a job, I mean, sometimes people can really get caught up in that, in that cycle, and it's a painful cycle, but there's a paycheck coming in.
Painful.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's so painful and it's so unfulfilling, Dr. Brewer, that in the end, I mean, what are we all here for? Right? We're here to be happy, and the paychecks will follow. I believe if you look at the happiness first, the paychecks will follow. There's a young man I know that's from a very, very prominent family, and I don't want to name the family, but he had an internship. He goes to an Ivy League school. He had an internship at a top investment bank, and he had so much pressure from his family and the, it's one of the biggest names in technology. And so he just freaked out basically and said, I need to figure out what I want. Everyone wants me to be this because this is my heritage. And he ended up taking a summer off in the middle of the summer between his sophomore and junior year of college. And he traveled around the world. He just said he left the internship, traveled around the world and just experienced life. And he's come to a whole new path of what he's going to be doing. And it's not going to be doing what everyone else is telling him what he should be doing. So I just feel like you really, even if you have the paycheck and you're not happy, either you can make it better where you are, and I can tell you ways you can if you're too afraid to move, or you actually make the shift and you go for something else. Like Sarita and Reed in the book, you know, From Drift to Shift, they're my first chapter about really, you know, why make a shift. And Sarita grew up in foster care.
Jody, I'm going to stop you right there because that
sure.
I really want you to sort of share with us Sarita and Reed's story. But we need to take a break right now. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will pick up with Sarita and Reed. And we will also pick up with Jody and Pamela. We'll be right back, folks. Jody, before we talk about Sarita's story, I just want to go back to something you said a moment ago as we were talking about how you make the shift, if you will, from the job where you perhaps have a paycheck, but it drives you up a wall, to something that really sort of feeds your soul and your pocket. And the one point that I'd just like to add is, you know, I say this to my clients a lot. What are you buying and how much is it costing you? If you're staying in this job because you need a paycheck, we get that. What is it costing you in terms of your emotional health, in terms of your psychological health, in terms of your relationship health? And so, you know, I would just say, while there are clearly everyday real world bills that need to be paid, I think it's really important, and I'm thinking that you will agree, that we really do need to really dig deeply into what that paycheck is actually costing us at the same time that we're looking at what it is we're actually buying. Because sometimes you're buying a lot of stress and sadness and destroyed relationships while you're bringing in the paycheck.
Well, I totally agree with you. I'd like to go back for a second about when you said about people who have the paycheck and they're just making it. Maybe, you know, maybe they're afraid to make the shift. They're just like, I got to pay my bills. There are some ways that you can sort of make it tolerable with the stress at work. And some of the ways that you can do that are, like I said originally, is to go in and talk to your boss and open that door of communication so that you feel that maybe you're heard a little more, and you build a mentor, you build a friend. Also, you know, it's okay to ask for help if you're overwhelmed. I mean, with technology, we are asked to be so productive 24/7. It's really ridiculous. And it's okay to ask for help or block your phone and say, I'm only taking emails, you know, between this time and that time. And no, you can't call me at 6 a.m. or send me texts at midnight. I mean, you know, creating boundaries is important, and asking for help. These are for the people that are in jobs that they are stressed, may not love it, but aren't yet ready to really make that shift out. The other thing you can do if you're in that position is, when you're looking at your colleagues, don't compete with them. You know, try and collaborate with them more. So you can do that in very simple ways of just chatting with them in the kitchen, coming up with ideas where you guys can do a project together, try and engage in more social support, you know, get a little more sleep so you're not stressed out. There are just so many different ways. Talk more positively to yourself on your way into the office. Just breathe when you're stressed out. Get outside on your breaks. Play some music while you're working. I mean, there are a lot of little things you can do to make that day more tolerable if you're in that position where you're just not ready. And some people just aren't ready. But I agree with you, Dr. Brewer, that there's a big cost if you're miserable and you're just, your life, I mean, you can have physical issues that come up from that, stress, relationship issues, and sometimes you might get to a point where you're like, I can't take it anymore. And that's when you're probably going to make your shift.
Certainly one of the things that I would say is very, very important is taking breaks during the day, whether you love where you are or whether you don't. Even if it's just a few minutes of deep breathing, it's so important to take those breaks. And a lot of times, as you said, particularly in this 24/7 world, breaks is not something that are particularly valued, but they're so healthy.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I love, this is something I tell people to do too, and I do it myself. So if you're going out with your colleagues for lunch, all of you put your phone in the middle of the table and you put it down, face down, and you're not allowed to touch it. And the first person who touches their phone has to pay. And I have heard so many funny stories come back to me about that advice, because we're addicted to our phones.
It's true.
I think about how many times, Dr. Brewer, you're in a restaurant and you see a couple or a bunch of work colleagues sitting there and they're all on their phones. So it's kind of a fun way to get a little competition, get away from the attachment to your phone and have some fun and just create some fun.
That's a great idea. I really like
bring
that
some
one.
More fun. Yeah, and I tell companies when I go in to talk about work happiness cultures, which is really what I love too, about how they can bring more fun into the workplace, and we just come up with fun ideas like have a Friday meeting with pizza and don't have the boss run the meeting. In fact, don't have them say anything. Let the young guy, let the quiet guy run the meeting. And there's so many different ways that you can bring everyone in as a team and make work a much more pleasant place to be.
Which actually makes it more productive. I was just going to ask you to tell us the story about Sarita and Reed.
Yes, they are so inspirational. Sarita started out in foster care. She was taken away from her family. And she ended up living with this woman called Dolly. She's kind of like a grandma type, but it was a daycare, and she was the only one who stayed over at night. And when her brother was born, she was reunited with her family, but she never was close to her family. And so she was always, as she got older, kind of hanging out with the water polo team and the girls at the school that she went to in Canada. And she had no money. She had nothing. And she figured that, you know, I'm never going to college. This is it. And she became a delinquent, and she ended up getting arrested. And I mean, she was kind of a mess. And one teacher said to her one day, I believe in you. I want you to take this exam. And the top 10 people get into the top university with this exam, and everything's paid for. And she was so mad. She was so angry. She's like, how could you do this to me? I have no money. I can't go to college. But she didn't realize it was all going to be paid for. And so she sat down, took this exam with no prep, and ended up in the top 10% of all of Canada.
Wow.
And so it was amazing. And she says, Jody, I don't even remember his name. I remember all the mean people in my life, but I don't remember the one man who changed my life and gave me that chance. So I tell people who are listening, be on the lookout. You know, watch the signs, because the signs are there for you. When I was writing this book, From Drift to Shift, the word shift came up everywhere. I was listening to Oprah. I think she used it 10 times in an interview. Deepak Chopra was using it. I was listening to some TED Talks. I heard it. I heard people talking about it in conversation, and I knew that word had to be in the title. So pay attention to those signs. And so Sarita did. Well, then she ended up scoring in the top 1%. And ended up going to the best MBA program in Canada. She got into Harvard and Stanford, but she went to the top school in Canada, where she met her husband now, Reed, who also grew up very poor in a farming community and had no money either. So neither of them had money. Well, they were both ended up so successful just because of their brain power, really, that they didn't even know they had. That Sarita became part of the 3Com, an old technology company, breakup, and Reed became part of the LinkedIn IPO on the investor relations side. So they were very successful in their corporate careers. They never thought they would do anything with their lives, but they followed the signs, and they had breaks, and they had mentors and people that cared. And so with Sarita, along the way, it kept nagging her. She said, I really feel like I need to do something for foster care kids, these in-between kids, these kids basically between age 14 and 20, because they age out, or 14 and 18. And once they age out, they're like on the street. So she says, these kids are the forgotten kids. They're not the ones that people want to adopt, you know, because they're not the cute little babies. They're sort of the troubled teenagers, basically. And she really, really wanted to help prepare these kids. So she ended up going over to Bain Consulting and saying, I'm coming here to learn how to run a nonprofit. I don't care about partnership. I don't care about anything else. I just want to learn how to run a nonprofit because I'm going to start one. So she shifted, and she gave up all the money. They put their house on the line. They put all their money on the line. And when I asked them how that felt, as you and I were just talking about the paycheck and what's the cost, she said, what do we care? We never had money anyway, so we don't have money again. Who cares? She's very funny. She's very funny and very matter of fact. So they laid everything on the line, every dollar they had, their mortgage, and they created iFoster. iFoster Now is the largest nonprofit for foster kids that's private, so it's not a government-run nonprofit, that can help these kids. They have a partnership with Starbucks for jobs. They put these kids through boot camps so that they learn how to be good employees, and Starbucks actually looks at their kids first. And there's a big grocery chain that also does that. They do Christmas gifts. They gave away like 7,000 gifts last year. And people go into Starbucks and pull off a little tag and they drop the gift off. And it's just amazing. And they have a board of directors that's a who's who, and they can write the check. So if someone, maybe it's a 16-year-old foster pregnant gal in high school, well, they're going to get her, you know, the care she needs, or if the baby's born, they'll get her the child care so she can go to the job interview. They'll show her how to dress. They'll help her prepare for the interview, and they get these kids jobs. And it's really, really impressive. And they were just written into the congressional record in California. And I think they're going to be honored at the White House if they haven't already been.
That's extraordinary.
So it's, they're just, and they're fun people, and they just love life, and they never cared about the money. They never cared. So I think if you can just, for people listening who are on that edge, and they say, I know what I want to do, or at least I know that I want to do something in this direction, just, you don't have to jump yet. Just pay attention to the signs, because the signs are there, and things will start to happen for you. And when you know you're ready, you'll know you're ready, and you will make that jump. You'll put your resume under those doors, or you'll walk up to the CEO of the company and say, I'm going to work for you. Or you'll just get this impulse that's overwhelming, and that's what you should follow.
When you say pay attention to the signs, I mean, that's sort of an intriguing piece of advice. What kind of signs? How do you pay attention? What do you look for? Or do they just sort of hit you in the head?
Well, it can go a lot of ways. I mean, we could talk about Andy's story and how his shift hit him in the head. But in general, I think the signs start to show up in many ways. There's a woman in the book named Sloan, and she started to see doves. Doves were appearing in just everywhere on billboards. They would sit outside her house. One sat on the driver's side mirror of her husband's car. And each time she'd see a dove, like something would kind of come across her path, and she'd think, I think I should follow that. Or a stranger could come up to you and give you advice, and you hear it differently. So if you just start paying attention to your surroundings, the conversations you're having, things start to line up and almost repeat themselves. And that's when you know that it's time to maybe think about going in that direction.
Tell us a story about the gentleman you just referenced whose shift hit him in the head, so to speak.
Yeah, Andy Wirth is the CEO of Squaw Valley and Alpine Ski Resorts in Northern California. And Squaw is a pretty hot mecca of top skiers. I mean, he has a lot of good buddies who've been on 60 Minutes and are stuntmen in movies. And I talk about them in the story as well. But Andy loves to jump. He's a skydiver as well. And he used to be a backcountry ranger. So, and his father, Conrad Wirth, was the head of national parks under three presidents. So he's sort of an outdoorsman from the beginning. And Andy was skydiving one day near Chico. And he was with a number of people on the plane, and they were all pretty much experts. So they pulled their chutes last so that they got to basically soar the longest. Well, the winds changed suddenly, and Andy had the choice, he was the last one out, to either go over a vineyard or turn 90 degrees and try and make it through some power lines to land. So he decided the power lines would probably kill him. So he thought, I can do it. I can make it over the vineyard. So unfortunately, he didn't. And he landed on a spike in the middle of a vineyard, and it ripped his arm almost completely off, like all the flesh and all the way down to his wrist. All that was left was a glob of flesh at his wrist, and he still had his hand. And he was bleeding basically like a pool of Cabernet around him, and he was all alone. And for Andy, this is going to sound kind of unusual, but for him, the only way to stay alive was with words. And the power of his mind kept him alive. And he remembered this song by Eddie Vedder, who's the main singer for the band Pearl Jam. He's one of my favorite singers too. And he has a song called Just Breathe. And Andy just started singing the words, "Yes, I understand that every life must end. As we sit alone, I know someday we must go. Stay with me, let's just breathe." And he knew, as being a backcountry ranger years ago, that if you can just breathe, then the stress won't overtake you, you won't go into shock, and you won't die. So he sat there and he just breathed. And eventually people came and he was airlifted, and he's had 26 operations to repair his arm. And when I sat down with him many times to talk about his life, he still has some trouble with his arm. He kind of helps it, but he has it. He kept his arm. And the cool thing about Andy is the shift that it made in him was not only a physical shift. He became so much more compassionate and empathetic and aware of the disabled community and the veteran community and his own personal relationships. And he just did a 180. He now lets every veteran come to Squaw. He gives them a $25 season pass, and trust me, season passes are very expensive at Squaw and Alpine. And he does these weekend warrior where he brings all these vets in and he teaches them all how to ski with his staff. And he goes, "Jody, I am so fulfilled. I talk to my kids all the time now. I didn't talk to them as much. I'm engaged. I reached out to so many friends. I love the disabled community. I love the environment so much. I love life so much." And he is just the pillar of philanthropic giving back, basically, from what he went through, both physically and emotionally. And so your shift can be a lot of things. And his hit him in the head. You know, that was one that just happened. But sometimes it's a gradual thing for us. We're in a relationship for a long time, and we know. I think you know, and I could say that to your audience. I think deep down inside, everyone listening, if you really think about it, you know. You know if it's time. You know if you're ready. You know if you're happy or you're unhappy. You do know, as much as you try and maybe show a different face to society.
As much as you try not to know sometimes.
Well, yeah, that too. No, I'm fine. No, I'm fine. I did that. I had a heart operation, and I was stressed out, but I went to the Stanford doctor. I had 20,000 premature beats, electrical premature beats every 24 hours, and she said, "Jody, you're stressed." I go, "No, I'm fine. I'm fine," but I was in an unhappy relationship, and I was hiding that. Yeah. I wanted everything to be so perfect.
Jody, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will continue talking with Jody B. Miller, who is the author of From Drift to Shift. So stay where you are. Jody, we were just talking about Andy Wirth's story, who is chapter 4 in your book, Drift to Shift. At the end of each of your chapters, you have takeaways from that chapter. And I was struck by one of the takeaways from chapter 4, in which you say, when in doubt, act. Always act. There's so many people who, when in doubt, sit still and try to figure out every single eventuality, and in doing that, do nothing.
Yes. And that goes back to what I was saying about, even if it's just an inch, if that's all you can do for that day, it's amazing when you just move things forward, even a little bit, whether it's a relationship, whether it's your work, whether it's talking to your boss, whether you are the boss and you give praise to someone. I mean, praise goes a long way. Whether you're out just giving, I went by a woman the other day on the street who was in a wheelchair. I gave her $10. And she just, the look on her face made my day. And so, it's, even if it's just a little bit, act. You can do small things that just can change your entire mood, your entire perspective, and move you forward toward really where you're meant to be.
You also tell the story of Emily Garfield.
She's amazing.
And I'd just like for you to briefly, if you can, tell us about Emily's story. I note that she had a very rare cancer as a child, and it was a cancer of the connective tissue between the bladder and the uterus, including the vagina and the tissues throughout the pelvis. And she was diagnosed with this as a child.
Yes, she was. Emily is basically a three-time cancer survivor. She would tell me twice, because once wasn't full cancer. But oh my goodness, this woman, the resiliency of this woman, she just won five first places in a ballroom competition. She just decided to do it, to learn how to do ballroom dancing, and won five first places. I mean, she's just amazing with what she's gone through. She just brings tears to my eyes. I just have so much admiration for her. She just won Entrepreneur of the Year in Santa Barbara in the health category, Woman Entrepreneur of the Year. She's amazing. But yeah, it was a rare form of cancer, and they basically had to rebuild her vagina, which she's still somewhat, you know, protective of and a little self-conscious of, but she's like, hey, it's me. I've got scars. That's what she says. I've got scars. This is who I am. And the cool thing about Emily is that she didn't think she would be able to have any children. But way back then, when she was 4, the doctor took one of her ovaries and tucked it underneath her ribs, above her stomach. And so when she got married and it was time to have babies, all her eggs were coming out black. So the idea was that they were going to take her eggs and put them into a surrogate mother.
Okay.
And they came out black. So, but her hormones were showing normal. So something was off, and she kept going to specialist after specialist, she and her husband. And one specialist said, I just have this funny feeling that maybe your ovary isn't where it's supposed to be. So she went and had a sonogram, and sure enough, there it was underneath like her ribs. And so they were able to get the eggs out and have three children.
Oh my.
Through the same surrogate mother, which is pretty cool.
And pretty extraordinary.
Extraordinary. And she's just, and her kids are great. Her kids are great. And so she became a Pilates instructor and a wellness coach, but she's not your normal Pilates instructor. Just like people tell me, I'm not your normal life coach or professional coach. She cares so much about every person. I went to the awards ceremony for her, and this woman next to her was 83 and is a cancer survivor. And she says, if it wasn't for Emily, I wouldn't be here. And she is so loved because she just embraces every day. She wakes up in the morning and she appreciates every day. And sometimes if we could all do a little more of that, where we just get up in the morning, and even if the appreciation is as simple as looking out and saying, gosh, that tree is beautiful, or look at that bird getting food for its baby. It's amazing how your mood starts out in a higher level to start your day versus turning on the news or looking at your email or reading about a tragedy, which sets you in a more of a downward spiral.
You know, what I'm hearing about all of the examples that we're talking about today, and certainly what you have written about in From Drift to Shift, is that they have challenges in their lives, and there are significant challenges. And rather than spend their time in the grief and the anger and the disappointment of the challenge, they're turning their challenge into their life's purpose and enjoying life.
That's a very good summary. Mm-hmm. That's so true. I mean, Emily she is such an inspiration. She has such a great attitude. She doesn't know what tomorrow brings. She doesn't know if in 3 months she'll have cancer again. But she's living every day, and she's moving forward, and she laughs, and she has joy, and she's so much fun to be around, and she's definitely a source of inspiration. And now she's doing a whole series about Pilates for cancer survivors. So she's teaching them the little things they can do right just in bed after surgery and in the privacy of their own home, and ways that they can start to heal. So she's amazing. There's another, I'll just tell you very quickly, Darren in the book was going to become a professional golfer, and he had a sudden shift as well. And all these shifts are not physical, but I wanted to show some dramatic shifts to show people that even if your shift isn't this dramatic, look what these people did with such big shifts. Your shift may not be that big. Look what you can do. If they can do this, look what you can do. And so people like Darren, had he not had the physical accident that he had on the way to a ski resort, and that, so he lost his dream of becoming a great skier and a professional golfer, he became a paraplegic. But had he not become a paraplegic, he wouldn't have gone back to his art. And had he not gone back to his art, he wouldn't have made the connection with the Food Network. And now his art is all over TV sets and the Food Network and restaurants throughout Las Vegas and other major cities. And he sells his paintings for thousands and thousands of dollars, and started his paintings because he was only able to attach duct tape to his hands. And so that's how he started his whole way of painting. And he started painting over the duct tape, and that became his signature. So you never know. You never know. You just have to be open. And the main messages that I try to relay to people is embrace the change. Even if you're not really happy with it, embrace it, because it might be the impetus to something great. That's number one. Number two is happiness. Happiness is what we all strive for. Seek happiness every day. And number three is, you matter. No matter what anyone tells you, you are unique. You have something to say. You have a contribution to make. You have a voice. You matter in this world. And never, ever doubt that. And that's really what I want people to know.
You also make it clear that it's okay to be an introvert and contemplative in an extrovert world. Why is it important to know that? And why was it important for you to say that as you were writing about From Drift to Shift?
Well, Doctor, I deal with a lot of introverts, and I believe in diversity. And if everyone was the same, then it would be kind of a boring world, don't you think?
Absolutely.
And introverts have a lot to say, and I love people that are introverted. And when I took the Myers-Briggs test, believe it or not, I was directly in the center. I was half introvert, half extrovert. And I'm very outgoing and happy and engaged in life, and my passion is helping people find what they're meant to do and find happiness. But there's a very quiet, contemplative side of me where I need my time away. I need to recharge. I need my creative thinking time. I need my Jody time. And I think introverts have a lot to teach us. And I think we should listen to them. And I believe in a work environment, you should have a mixture of every type of person, introverts, extroverts, wild creatives, you know, people that may have a lot of degrees and maybe someone who doesn't have any. And I think the ideas that flow from a diverse community are fantastic. And so don't ever discount someone who's introverted. They have so much to say.
You also say that once you shift, you have to let go of, and you list a number of things, including pushing or trying to control and letting go of judging. Are those natural outflows as you engage in the shift in your life, or is that work you need to do?
I think we try too hard sometimes. We try so hard to make things happen. So when the shift happens for you, and it's new, it's almost like a movie, you know, the classic movie, Act 1, Act 2, Act 3. So in Act 3, you've made it into the new world, and it may be a little odd and uncomfortable. But if you just let go and not try and control everything and not try so hard and just kind of go with the flow, and again, I go back to paying attention to the signs and being aware of what's going on around you and feeling that impulse within, your shift will just, it'll stay, it'll grow, it will blossom, and it'll be fun. And you'll have passion and joy when you wake up in the morning, and you'll want to go to work, or you'll want to be in that relationship. But if you try too hard, it's like two opposing magnets. It doesn't work. So let it go. It's okay. Take a nap. Go for a walk. You know, it's okay. Go out for a cup of coffee. Treat yourself well. And find your inner happiness. Because if you can get there, then whatever shift you've gotten through, you will maintain it, and it'll grow into even greater things.
As you're moving towards your own path, in your own way, there are going to be people who are complaining about what you're doing, complaining about what they're doing. I mean, there are tons and tons of naysayers in the world. How do you navigate through what can be some pretty rocky waters as you're trying to move towards your own best place of living?
Well, I have two things to say about that. I was in the airport the other day on the way back from my son's graduation, and these three girls were sitting behind me having coffee and just complaining about their colleagues, and she did this to me and he did that, and I just got up and walked away. So sometimes you just have to walk away from the naysayers, because it's not, their journey isn't yours. And you need to have the power to not listen sometimes. And that could even be your parents. I mean, there are a lot of very, very successful people in this world who went their own way. I mean, I love, oh God, Steve Jobs is alone is a great story, when he dropped out of college and just took a calligraphy course and came up with fonts. And that became, you know, the basis of the fonts for the Mac. I think you have to just follow your own intuition. Do not go with the naysayers. And if you cannot surround yourself with negativity, that's a big bonus. And I can't think of any negative person around me anymore. And I used to have that, and I sort of just moved away from those people, because life's too short. I want to have positive influences in my life. And not everyone's going to approve of what you're doing, but if you find the conviction within and you follow that, it really doesn't matter what they think, because they're bringing their own stuff into those conversations. It's important for you to honor you. And I know that may sound a little selfish, but I think if you can't love yourself first, well, then how can you go out there and contribute to the world? So someone else's direction or story or isn't, if it's not your story, don't follow it. But if you feel the impulse and you get good advice and you feel like it resonates, well, that's different. You know, you've got to look within and trust your intuition. And if that is good advice, then you might think, yeah, that sounds like that could be right up my alley. That is in line with what I'm thinking. Then maybe you will follow that. But with the naysayers, just put earplugs in. Don't listen.
There you go.
I'm serious.
You just said life can be short, and unfortunately our time is short, and we're going to have to get out of here, but there's so much more to talk about, and there's so much more you've incorporated into From Drift to Shift, including really interesting Q&As and really interesting exercises. Where can folks go to get more information about From Drift to Shift?
Sure. Thanks for asking. They can order it from Amazon. It's out on every digital platform globally right now. The book officially comes out in print and hardcover August 8th, but if you pre-order, you'll get it in July. Or you can order a signed copy from me today because I get advanced copies on my website, and that's jodybmiller.com, and that's Jody with a Y.
Okie doke. Jody, thank you very much for your time, for the work that you're doing, and for the sharing that you have created in From Drift to Shift. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Doctor. I really enjoyed our conversation.
As did I. And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. You can listen to it on demand by going to mindtalk.org, mindtalk.org. You can also download the Mind Talk app from the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store. You can go to iTunes and you can sign up for the Mind Talk podcast that way. So there are lots of ways to listen to Mind Talk whenever you choose and as you choose. I'd love to know where in the world you are as you're listening to Mind Talk today. Send an email to me at pamela@mindtalk.org. Again, mindtalk.org. And I want you to remember always, if it's unacceptable, then that is exactly what it is. Unacceptable. You take care.